Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Anthony Brooks is off this week. Let's talk about some numbers for a moment. In this country, gun violence takes 15,000 lives every year. That's a lot. But substance abuse and addiction kill 115,000 people per year. In some communities, 80% of the crime is related to drug use. And in some hospitals, 75% of people admitted to emergency rooms are there because of drugs. Addiction costs the economy at least $100 billion annually in lost productivity. And addiction is the number one cause of non-natural death in America. So my two guests believe that those numbers add up to three facts. One, addiction is America's greatest tragedy. Two, the war on drugs has failed. And three, the dominant paradigm for addiction treatment does little to help those who may need it most. Those are the disturbing conclusions in the new book, Clean, Overcoming Addiction and Ending America's Greatest Tragedy. It's by David Sheff, who joins us now in the studio. David Sheff, welcome to Radio Boston.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Also, we're joined now by former Rhode Island Congressman Patrick Kennedy, whose own struggle with addiction reached its nadir in a 2006 car crash in Washington, D.C. Congressman Kennedy, welcome to you.
Thank you.
I should say that both men will be speaking together tonight at the Brookline Booksmith about this issue, and there's more information about that at our website, radioboston.org. And listeners, if you have thoughts on your own struggles with addiction or America's approach to it, give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Now, David Sheff and Congressman Kennedy, you both have very personal reasons for having a profound amount of interest in how America approaches the addiction tragedy. And I want to hear a little bit from both of you about that before we dive into sort of the policy and the analysis. And Congressman Kennedy, I wonder if we could start with you. Just, you've been very open about it, but I wonder if you could remind those of us who don't know what happened in 2006.
Well, I have two chronic illnesses. I have asthma and I have alcoholism and addiction. But our healthcare system treats them differently. In the case of my addiction, I have to wait till I have an acute episode before I get treatment. In the case of my asthma, I get all the preventive health care. I get a primary care doc. I get medications. I know what to look out for. I stay away from situations that could trigger an asthma attack. So this is true of diabetes or any other chronic illness. We respond early and we try to prevent things. But in addiction, if it were equated to diabetes, we would wait till we were taking off people's legs and amputations. That's how long we wait to treat addiction and alcoholism.
And that at times leads to those acute episodes that you were talking about. I mean, you had a car crash in 2006.
Right. And you know what? Most people with my illness end up in the criminal justice system because we don't have a public health system to speak of in terms of treatment. If we screened people early and got them early health care, just like we do with diabetes and asthma and other chronic illnesses, for addiction, substance abuse disorders, we would have different statistics that you'd be reading off at the beginning of your show. So, yes, I am an addict, an alcoholic, but I am a person now in recovery, which means if I don't want to return to that, I need to stay healthy. And I ought to have a system of care that treats my illness the same way it would if I had diabetes or I had, as I do, asthma.
David Sheff, Clean is your second book about addiction. The first one was a bestseller called Beautiful Boy, and it was about your son. And his struggles, and therefore your family's struggles with addiction. Tell us a little bit about what happened to your son.
Well, I was like probably most parents out there. You know, I had this image of what a drug addict looked like, and it sure didn't look like my child. And yet, you know, when he was 12 years old, I found some pot in his backpack, and, you know, I went to see his teachers and I was worried about it, and they said, oh, Nick's fine, he's a great kid, he's going to be fine, but he wasn't. And before it was over, he was shooting heroin, he was on the streets, he almost lost his arm because it was infected, he was in the emergency room two or three times. And that's when I learned what Patrick learned, which is that we have an addiction care system that is a disaster. Nick was, my son was was a teenager, and what we now know is that of the people who become addicted, 90% of them start using when they're kids. And I was lost. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to help him. And there was not anybody. I went to doctors, and nobody could tell me what to do. So the struggle, you know, it's what I recounted in Beautiful Boy, trying to save my son's life. And then I had to figure out, you know, how to help other people who are in this situation. That's why I went forward to write Clean. It was to figure out what's wrong with the system and how we can fix it.
Well, in a nutshell, can you share with us what you concluded about standards of treatment in the United States now when it comes to addiction?
I think that the problem that you know, we learned the hard way once again is that the addiction care treatment system in America is based on the fact, based on the fallacy, this long-held prejudice that people who get, you know, addicted are there because they've chosen to use drugs and therefore they sort of deserve what happens to them. It's a, you know, they're weak. They don't just stop, but they could.
So you're saying it begins with an improper presumption.
It begins with an improper presumption. But what I know now and what the treatment system is. Needs to be, and it's starting to. I mean, it's shifting, but it's acknowledging the fact that addiction is a disease, and it's a treatable disease and a preventable disease. We just aren't preventing it and treating it right now.
Patrick Kennedy, does that assessment, you know, resonate with you and what you experienced personally and have seen since then? That we start at the wrong place when it comes to addiction treatment in the country?
Well, absolutely. And but we're in a different environment now. I was in addition to being an alcoholic and an addict, I was also the sponsor and author of the Mental Health Parity and Addiction Equity Act, along with my colleague Jim Ramstead in the House and my father and Senator Domenici in the Senate. Obviously, my father took Paul Wellstone's place on that bill when he was tragically killed. The point is it's the law of the land now that health insurers are to treat mental health and addiction the same as other physical illnesses. And since, as David just pointed out, and as every scientist will tell you, these are physical issues, we need to do so. But he also pointed out the truth, and that is prejudice still reigns. And that's built around a lot of ignorance. And his book, Clean, is about taking away that ignorance. I thought it was a fantastic book. I recommend it to everybody who wants to understand intimately what we're up against. So I really salute David for his good work.
Well, David Sheff, let me ask you, there's so much that was quite eye-opening for me when I read your book. And let's talk in detail about some of it. For example, you're talking about the presumptions that go into standards of care for addiction treatment across the country. And you mentioned that, you know, one of the standards, and that is AA or AA-type treatments, while helpful to many, and it has been, doesn't work for an equal, if not greater, number of people and the consequences of that. So why do you say that?
Well, the first point is absolutely it saves people's lives. My best friends, many of them actually, are in recovery, and they practice the 12 steps, and they're alive because of AA. But it doesn't work for everybody. And the problem is we have a system that really, in many cases, it's not so much about AA. It's not about the 12 steps even. It's that many treatment programs insist that it's the only way to get sober. I mean, Nick,
I mean, you write that 90% of some treatment centers are AA-based.
That's right. And so, and in these programs, it's not. It's one thing. Everybody should have that as an option. The programs should teach people that this does help a lot of people. But my son was in programs where he was yelled at, and he was, you know, AA says you have to turn your life over to a higher power. And he was a teenager, and teenagers don't want to turn their lives over to anybody. And you know, he said that if they said to him over and over again that you are going to die if you don't do it our way. And, you know, thank God Nick didn't die, but some kids do, or some people do. So the point is AA is brilliant, but it's not enough for everyone, and there need to be options.
Why do you think sort of newer concepts of what causes addiction and perhaps the genetic factors or the concurrent mental illnesses that go into it and the wide variety of research that's gone into alternative forms of treatment haven't yet really trickled in more significantly into most treatment centers across the country?
Well, I think now's the time when that will shift. I think part of it has to do with the work Patrick's doing. I mean, once insurance is once people are insured for the kind of treatment that they need, then treatment centers are going to be accountable. Insurance companies aren't going to pay money for people who are telling you have to you know, scrub the toilets with a toothbrush, which is one of the things Nick had to do in one of the programs he was in. They're going to pay for treatment programs that are run by people who know what they're doing, that offer evidence-based programs, evidence-based treatment. And we the science tells us not only that this is a disease, but, you know, there are specific things that work. And we just need to get those to people that need it so that we can save all these lives.
Patrick Kennedy, in the treatment that you've received in your life, did you go through AA-based treatments? Did it work for you? I mean, what's your take on this sort of form of will triumphing over what you're calling a disease?
Well, first of all, as David
we don't
pointed
ask people
out,
with diabetes to overcome it through will.
Right. Well, as David pointed out, the real opportunities now, we have health care reform, we have the Mental Health Parity Act. We can change the way this illness is paid for, and we're going to get different treatment as a result. The bottom line is people don't show up and identify themselves as addicts and alcoholics. The stigma's so alive. So you asked, how could it be in this situation, an illness like this, it's clearly physical, is so discriminated against? The reason is that we don't have people as advocates out there because of the shame and stigma of this illness. But the AIDS movement proved that it could be done. I mean, just look at what's happened. And so I think what we need is we need to change the paradigm and get people in recovery to show up at the insurance commissioner's office and demand this stuff get paid for. Go show up at the state house, demand that this get the attention. If this were leukemia and we had this death rate, people would be up in arms and protesting in front of the Capitol. And right now we've got a new population suffering from these illnesses. It's our returning veterans. And if we think in this country we're going to be able to sit by with 18 suicides a day of veterans because they feel shamed by their quote-unquote invisible wounds of war. There's nothing invisible about the wounds they've suffered. And yet we're still not treating them as medical issues. And that's what we really need to do.
Let's take a couple calls here. Rob is calling from North Reading. You're on the air, Rob.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. A lot of respect for NPR and Mr. Kennedy. But I just wanted to say about my personal triumph with this. I'm a businessman for 20 years, but I've had serious back pain for 10 plus years and had to take medication. Once my ruptured disc finally ruptured and was removed and the pain was gone, I had nowhere to go to stop taking the medicine. I was addicted because I had to be. And there was nowhere to go. They just give you some Valium or something else and say, you should be fine. But you need a program to go to for this case, let alone people who are drug addicts on the street.
Rob, thank you so much for your call. I mean, David Sheffy, Rob points to a very basic problem in that even knowing where to go for treatment seems to be a major hurdle for a lot of people.
Oh, it is. Even where to start. I just called my friends, anybody who I could think of, you know, who had, like, somebody had a kid who'd gone into treatment. Now I know that there actually is a model to follow. You find a doctor, you find a psychiatrist who's trained in addiction medication, and that's where to start. Somebody needs to be assessed. Is there a problem? How serious it is? Is it possible to stop it with a brief intervention, or does somebody need more extensive care?
Mm. You know, there's a part of your book which really sort of took me aback, and maybe because I have a young person in my life, and that is addiction and children or teens especially. You know, and you write about how the younger a person is when they begin to experiment with drugs, the more likely they are to become addicted. And that seems to make a lot of sense, and yet, you know, teenagers are the kind who don't necessarily want to listen to anti-drug messages. So what's your thoughts on that?
That's not true. We just haven't used the right researched public relations messages on kids.
Okay. Well, yeah. What example, I mean, you write about examples that parents can do just to the sheer act of their own living, their own behavior.
Well, parents model for their kids. Parents, we think, you know, with our teenagers that we have absolutely no influence on them. Well, we have more influence on them than anyone else. You know, they're growing up in a really, really stressful time. Kids are struggling just with the normal stresses that, you know, sort of maybe we experience too, but it's, you know, there's bullying, there's cyberbullying, there's this, you know, there's sort of intense pressure for some kids to succeed, you know, to have their college resumes filled out by the time they're 12 years old. And on the other hand, there's kids who are suffering without families, without any social support. If we can get in and help kids when they're really young, before these problems get to be so enormous that drugs become a solution and then addiction kicks in, that's when we're going to have to, that's when we're going to be able to start making a difference and saving these kids.
So Patrick Kennedy, what are the right messages then?
Well, the first of all, we need to invest in getting the best messages. The fact that there's been no effort on this part is troubling when you think about the consequences of this as a public health epidemic. So all I can say to folks is we need to get people out and petition their Massachusetts Department of Insurance regulations right now considering mental health parity laws here in the Commonwealth. We need to do that across the country. You know, what's going to change this is people getting mobilized, and that's always been what's changed the law is when people get activated. And that's what this book and David's going around the country and talking about his book Clean is going to help us do.
Well, and also Patrick before mentioned the AIDS crisis. And one of the things that changed was when people, you know, there was the whole silence equals death campaign because people were hiding. Silence equals death with addiction too. And there is now a movement that says that we have to come out, we have to talk about it, we have to march, we have to write letters. We have to raise this so that nobody can ignore the fact that this is America's number three killer.
So I've heard both of you talk about how laws need to be changed, attitudes need to be changed. But on the other hand, we have a generation now where drugs and drug addiction in this country have been placed in the paradigm of a war, the war on drugs, and that the best means by which to win this war is through law enforcement. It's through maintaining many drugs, if not all, as illegal, through prison time, etc. That's the way that both the money and most of the laws have been written in the past many years. And yet, both of you, I gather, would say that it's been a total failure. I mean, David Sheff, let's start with you. That's a major mental shift to overcome, though, in this country.
Well, I think it is. I haven't heard Patrick on this. I'm curious when he talks about it. But what I found is that, you know, we spend $1 trillion on this problem, and we think about it wrong. The basic overall problem is that I didn't at first when my son got addicted. Now I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that this is a disease. It's a health problem. We are treating it as a criminal problem. It's a health crisis. And when we make that shift, we can start effectively preventing people from using and treating addicts.
Patrick Kennedy?
I would agree. I think the answer, though, is not to have a permissive environment where using drugs is okay, but rather to use expungement for people who go to get the treatment and so forth as a way to avoid the criminal record that often dogs them for life and is very discriminatory for them in trying to get back in their lives. I do think we know that usage tracks with legality. We've seen that with alcohol and tobacco. We've also seen
positively with legality,
meaning more people who think that there's no harm to it
will use.
And we know the alcohol industry targets kids. We know from the tobacco litigation that the tobacco companies targeted kids. And it's foolish for us to think that the marijuana industry, the new tobacco, is not going to target kids. And guess what? There are four times as many liquor stores in poor neighborhoods than affluent ones. You know, they know that it's not about drinking responsibly because these liquor companies make money off of people like me who are alcoholics. That's their profit margin. So let's understand when you give them a corporate motivation to double down on addiction, their messages are going to be saturating the airwaves, trying to tell people there's nothing wrong with these things. And I think that could be a real jeopardy to public health.
I want to get one more call in here. Nick is calling from Weston. You're on the air, Nick.
My son died of heroin overdose, and he started smoking pot in high school. You may have already answered my question. It seems to me crazy to be legalizing marijuana for people who are ill or for anybody when it seems to me, at least from my personal experience, to lead to harder drugs. What do you think about that?
Nick, first of all, thank you so much for your call, and we're terribly sorry about your son, but I very much appreciate you sharing your story with us. David Sheff?
Well, Nick, first of all, I obviously have to say the same thing. It breaks my heart, and it's a disaster. I guess the only thing I would say is I totally understand how you feel. I get it. all I know is that my kids, you know, are in school. They're in high school. My son now started college, but my daughter's still in high school. Anybody in that school who wants to get some pot can get it. So we're not solving the problem. We're not the illegality is not keeping kids from using. And I really worry about that. I think that we have to stop our kids from using, but we've been doing it wrong, and we have to educate them, and we have to help them grow up in a safe, safe, safe way.
Patrick Kennedy, we've just got a couple seconds to go, but the last thought can go to you.
Yeah, well, the marijuana industry is not going to put enough money. We get, for every dollar we get in alcohol excise taxes, we spend 10 more plus on emergency rooms, on police to respond to car accidents, and on all this stuff. This is going to cost us. Medical marijuana, there are medicinal uses, but you can deliver it without smoking it. This notion that we're going to have wide growing of marijuana, I just think is going to be bad for the public health. For this man's son, it's an illustration about the impact of even one more kid thinking it's all right to start using drugs without there being any consequences.
Well, Patrick Kennedy served 16 years in the U.S. House of Representatives, and he was author and lead sponsor of the Mental Health Parity and Addiction Equity Act in 2008. Mr. Kennedy, thanks so much for coming today.
Thank you for having us.
And David Sheff, author of Clean, Overcoming Addiction and Ending America's Greatest Tragedy. David Sheff, it is a profound book. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having us.
And as a reminder, again, both David Sheff and Patrick Kennedy will be speaking together on this issue at the Brookline Booksmith tonight. There's a lot more information about that at our website, radioboston.org. Stick with us. There's more of the show coming up. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.